This is Mae Warren. It's tape two with John Donaldson, October 29th, 1996, in Atlanta, Georgia. Okay, as we mentioned it back at the beginning, you were in the first class who came, who knew you were going to be co-ed?
Well, no, I was in the first class where all four classes were co-ed. The prior year to my entry,
okay.
there was a class of all men.
Okay. So you never experienced that, but these guys you talked to back in Baltimore had gone.
Right, a lot of them had. And it took really until the end of my 4 years there for, I think, most of the, maybe it didn't take quite that long, but it was an evolving process while I was there in terms of alumni getting used to co-education. I think that there are still alumni out there that graduated that are not happy that there are women at WNL, which I find moronic. I mean, partly because I don't think that the experience has changed that dramatically. I mean, WNL is really not too terribly different, I don't think, than when they graduated. I mean, be it, you know, I think there's crowd probably in the late 70s and 80s, early 80s that were close enough to the time of when co-education occurred that carried some resentment. But I think too, I mean, if you look on a very base level at a WNL diploma as sort of a stock certificate, I mean, the value of your diploma has increased quite a bit because of co-education, and certainly not a way that I like to think about it a lot, but if you look at it really on its most basic terms, the value that the world puts on your diploma has increased a lot because of that. Well, I mean, how you feel about it is, and how you feel about your experience is completely different. But from an external observation, because the scores have gone up, because the school's gotten much more publicity, it is more valuable. And I think if you look at, say, Hampton Sydney, that has remained all male, I mean, WNL and Hampton Sydney were thought of not much differently in 1982. Now they're not even on the same in the same ballpark. And I think if you look at what's happened to them, you should be grateful that WNL went go-ed. I mean, not to disparage another place, but I think it's an interesting contrast.
And it's right there, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I mean, there aren't too many people probably who graduated in 82 would have thought that the WNL, you know, admission SAT average would be what it is today. And I don't think that it has certainly raised the level of the academics, but I don't know that it's changed the student body as much as people think that it has. I think it's still the same kind of WNL crowd as it's been since this place got going. My wife and I laugh all the time. We go to different alumni events, and it's sort of the same crowd throughout the generations. I mean, the names change, but the faces kind of, from the people that are still in school to older alums, it's remarkable how little difference it seems that there are between people. I don't know whether that's all good, but it's unusual.
My observation is that there's definitely a WNL cookie cutter.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't make any difference whether it's male or female, either.
Probably not.
The women seem to be the same cookie cutter.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, though. I mean, I look at these guys, and I'm like, you know, that guy, I mean, all these guys could have been friends of mine 5 years ago. And my friends and I probably look not much different than they did, running around then, you know. It's funny. but my wife was in my class as well, and she was the first woman to be elected to one of the executive spots on the executive committee. Like, she was the first secretary, and then I think she was secretary of the EC. And so I still think that there was some resentment on campus that I think subsided by the time that we got out. But when we were in our middle years there, about women in positions of power that took, you know, the earlier classes of women really taking charge to try to eliminate that perception or that animosity towards that. And for that, they deserve a lot of credit.
How about, now you're telling me your wife went to W&L. Mm-hmm. How about road trips? Were they important to you?
Road trips got to be less important, I think. I mean, well, Carol and I dated for a good most of our time there, but road trips, I think, really started to subside in importance when I was there, starting when I got there, and more so towards the end. I think the social dynamics of that part of Virginia have changed pretty radically once W&L went co-ed. I think a lot of the women's colleges shifted their focus towards, you know, UVA and Hampton, Sydney, probably UVA more than any place, I think. And there were still, you know, plenty of, you know, W&L Hollins and Sweetbriar romances and that kind of thing. And people, we would go down to Hollins and Sweetbriar occasionally, but not on a regular, excuse me, on a weekly basis, or at least, you know, my friends didn't. And I don't think a lot of people did, or nearly as many as in years past. Certainly that. But W&L kind of became more insulated in some ways because of it, because there wasn't as much reason to travel, which I didn't miss too much. It's a more normal experience, I think.
And let's end on a party note. Tell me about fancy dress in your time.
Let's see. I'm trying to reconstruct. Fancy. I'm trying to think. A lot about fancy dress is interesting, and I can tell you. Fancy dress is still, I think, one of the best parties, I mean, as an event, better than anything else I've been to on a consistent basis. I mean, it's a party that I think used to have a national reputation, and it certainly still does in the Southeast. But the amount of effort that people put into getting ready for it, and the decorations, and the bands, and the hype, and the whole thing is pretty neat, because it happens in such a dead time of the year. You know, it's that early March, I think. It gives you a little hope to make it through the Virginia winter, and I think my favorite fancy dress story was walking around in there, and I forget which one that it was. It might have been the last one, but I looked around and I noticed there was this guy who looked sort of out of place. I mean, he had sort of a long, like, trench coat on, and he was wearing like a funky hat, and I realized it was Michael Stipe from the band from R.E.M. who just happened to be up there, who'd made a trip, and he was walking around with all these little kids, and I guess he's friends with Sally Mann up there. But there's Michael Stipe, you know, with the, you know, this international band who just happens to be cruising around fancy dress. Yeah. I think that there were a lot of interesting stories like that have come out of. I can't think of too much else.
Was there a conflict between mock convention and fancy dress?
We resolved it very early and amicably. We set the date. You know, we explained our reasons for wanting to move it up and to cross into what traditionally had been Fancy Dress Weekend. And John Flippin, who at the time was the chairman of Fancy Dress, was very accommodating and I think understood our predicament well. And as a result, having it a little bit later,
having
Fancy Dress a little bit later, was not a bad thing for them because the weather's better. There's more you can do outside. You know, I mean, it was, as I recall, a really nice weekend for Fancy Dress, and it's a kind of a packed month. You know, I mean, it's a busy, it's a with my convention in the very beginning and then Fancy Dress at the end. I mean, there's a lot going on in a short stretch, and I don't think it diminished the, you know, the success of Fancy Dress at all.
There was some feeling this year that it did.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. And I wondered whether that had been the experience.
I don't remember that vividly. I mean, partly because John and his crew really did a spectacular job in putting that one together. Maybe too, I wasn't paying that much attention to it. I mean, I was just kind of glad to be at somebody else's party. But I don't think that it didn't seem to me at the time. So you may find that it was people had different perceptions about mm-hmm. it.
Well, it seemed people were saying that this was something new this year.
Oh,
that there was a sense this year that something had been different than has ever been before. So
what was the theme this year, do you remember?
Alice in Wonderland. And what they said was that some of the same people were doing Fancy Dress who'd been involved in my convention, and they were just exhausted.
Oh,
and
okay.
And so the decorations weren't up there.
I don't think we had too much crossover in that regard. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that they were pretty distinct organizations in that. I don't know what these people were thinking if they thought that they could do both within a month of each other. I mean, that's a prescription for disaster mm-hmm. right there, I think. That's funny.
Well, I don't know. This was my first year, so I don't know what it was like in the
past.
Well,
it's got to be a kind of a strange experience. I mean, coming in and as an observer, I'll be really excited to read your book about your observations there.
It's not my observations.
Well,
it's everybody else's.
No.
I'm pulling in everybody
right.
else's. That's exactly why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, it's... I can't...
It's your story. This is Washington Lee's story.
It's a spectacular place, defining experience probably in my life, for sure.
Well, that's a pretty nice way to end, but is there anything more you would like to say?
No, I'm trying to think if there's anything else that we missed while I was... this is something that I don't know whether you are, I suspect you're probably not going to talk about in this book, but about the whole Blake Comer episode, you probably knew about that. About the woman that was killed, who was a freshman.
Oh, I'd very much like to have you talk about that.
I don't know whether I'm real comfortable about... I mean, I can talk about it, but I'd rather not you quote me mm-hmm. on that in the book. Is that...
That's fine.
Is that all right?
That's fine.
That was just because I've got some friends that have... I mean, I don't... I was a sophomore when that happened, but that was such a bizarre episode at WNL in terms of you know, a cover-up that it was hard to put boundaries on who was involved. And I mean, this woman that was killed was a freshman, and that was the beginning of, winter of my freshman year. And, you know, this huge investigation that went nowhere until the following year, and when one of this guy's fraternity brothers came forward with, and said that he knew who had done it, and apparently, you know, this guy had gone up to D.C. and replaced his windshield. And do you know much about the story at all?
Yeah. A little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then had lived this really, really mysterious life for a year, denying the whole, you know, not denying it, but not, you know, talking about it to other people. I think talking generally about it, sort of in normal conversation, did you hear about this? And then the rumor has always been that a lot of other people knew about it and never said anything. And I don't know enough about the situation to really speculate on that, but I've always thought it was one of the negative experiences that I had there, and that made me sort of, I don't know, just question a little bit about the honor system and about how that could happen if people knew about it. Not to end on a negative note.
But that's been said before. It's said by administrators. You're the first person who was a student I've talked to in that time period. But there's some residual stuff about that floating around.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's something out of a movie. You know, I think sometimes when I get in my creative moods, I mean, that would be a great screen story, because it's so, I mean, it's stranger than fiction, really. I mean, you've got, you know, a homicide of some variety. You can define it as you want, but and then this just crazy cover-up afterwards, and really without a lot of, I don't know that the residuals were that dramatic. I mean, there may be some resentment, or I don't know what the description of it would be, but there wasn't much publicity about it afterwards.
What did happen?
What happened to?
Once it came out, who had done it?
It was. I didn't really know Blake at all. I mean, I kind of knew who he was. He was 2 years ahead of me. But people were just kind of flabbergasted by the entire thing. They couldn't believe it. At least my friends, and you know, it was sort of like, people were just absolutely shocked. And then I guess I can't remember how, there was a trial, and then or maybe he pled, I don't remember exactly the details of it, but it was really, it was such a low point, you know, for Debbie Nell, I think, really. I mean, not through any collective experience, but just because of one individual and what can happen in that situation. So that's about it, really, I think. I can't think of too many other
interests. Well, this has been a really very broad interview. I thought we were going to talk about just mock convention, and it's been very good and broad and deep.
Well, good.
I thank you.
My pleasure. I'm glad I can help. I look forward to reading about WNL in the 20th century.
So do I.
Probably have a few miles to go before.
I do indeed.